1340WNBS.com presents the Neil Bradley Show, your expanded look at local and regional sports with weekly guests or experts in their field. With today's show, here's Neil Bradley.
Welcome back to the program. One game in the books for Murray State football. We'll talk about the Racer football team, what they have coming up this week, OVC football, some Murray State soccer, volleyball, women's basketball schedules out, and some high school football. It's Wednesday. That means Ed Marlowe is in as we have a really busy show. Ed, we're going to get right to Racer football, and turnovers is what we continue to hear. They had six, cost them dearly, 28 points off turnovers for Southern Illinois. And Mitch kind of said basically at the press conference this week that it was Murray State that beat Murray State. I thought SIU played really well. They have a really fine team, but the Racers certainly played a major role in their own demise with the turnovers.
Yeah, a major role. And I think if you kind of take a look at that scenario, it really is hard to get a good read on what this Murray State football team is going to be about this season. I thought from an attitude standpoint, they tried to stay with the game. They never really deviated from the offense. They still tried to mix in a lot of the run and the pass as the game kind of continued forward. But if you take a look, really the biggest analysis that I got from the turnovers were where they happened. You had the interception deflection in the end zone as Drew Anderson got basically pummeled in that situation, and that turned into a 0-yard interception return for a touchdown, right, which you rarely see. We might not see that for again in the next 5 to 10 years, but it's just a very rare opportunistic play that SIU made to put them up pretty big early in the first half. But of the six turnovers, four of them were fumbles, and all four of them were on big plays. Just big, big plays. One was on a 22, 23-yard screen right in front of the Racer offensive, like right in front of the team. Like they just knocked the ball out on this along the sideline.
Yeah.
One was a catch from DJ Pinnick over the middle that was just forced. It was about a 22 to 23-yard gain. Probably could have gone for extra yardage. They punched the ball out. Jeremy Chin got a hold of it. Another one was a complete pass that was to, I believe, Armani Hayes.
Yes.
That they ended up ruling a fumble. I thought for sure, first I thought it was a fumble, then somebody said, no, it's an interception, and I was like, the ball hit his hands, he caught it, turned, had it, basically it kind of was jostled in kind of the transition, he made a football play, they swat it, returned that for a touchdown. You know, that's three of the fumbles right there, all of them, and that was a conversion for a first down. And so, you just didn't really get a chance to see. You take the football math and you add it all up. SIU coming over with six turnovers. They didn't really have to throw the football much. Once they were up about two scores and kept forcing turnovers, they knew that they could churn some clock, which, of course, put the Racers on the back of their heels. And then furthermore, it just ended up being a situation that it seemed like every time the Racers got any sort of momentum, it just never really, really amounted to much of anything. I felt like the toughest turn in the entire game, though, and again, and Mitch mentioned this on Monday, the part that concerned him the most from the game, obviously the turnovers, that's an easy concern. You go to the locker room, you say, we cannot turn the ball over, we cannot cough the football up. You know, I might have even been more concerned if it had been six interceptions, but four of the six turnovers are fumbles. You got to cover the ball up. Even if you don't think you're going to gain any more yardage, just drop to the turf, take a positive play, move forward. You'll never get tempo when you have six turnovers. But I thought the more concerning play was the Racers get the turnover. Coakley Nicholas returns what they thought was a forced fumble for a touchdown. Looks like it's going to be 21-16, maybe 21-17. They reverse the play because of, I guess they ruled it an incomplete pass,
right,
which I'm still not sure I understand because it was behind the line of scrimmage and whatever. And it looked like it was they ruled that it was a lateral pass instead of a backward pass. And I guess I get that, but I was level with the play. I didn't necessarily agree with that, but that's neither here nor there. But the team didn't get that message that it was neither here nor there. So instead of going down in the locker room, down 21-10 with a minute and a half to go, SIU motors down the field. I mean, just absolutely did whatever they wanted. 15-yard gain, 10-yard gain, 5-yard gain, 8-yard gain. And Mitch mentioned this on Monday. He's more perturbed than instead of anteing up and saying, okay, well, we didn't get that turnover for a touchdown. We gave up 7 more points, and we're down 28-10 at the half instead of 21-10 at the half. Mm-hmm. You're down 21-10 at the half. That's a touchdown, two-point conversion, and a field goal. It's two possessions. Yeah. You know, you go down 20-28-10, cash it in.
And they're getting the ball to start the half. Yeah. They score, it's over, pretty much.
Pretty much. And that's, you know, you're telling your team, okay, well, we're down 18, and they're probably fixing to go up 25 because they're feeling it. They're thinking it. The first thing they want to do when they get the ball coming out of the second half is let's score. So they're going to play to score. And they actually tried to. They tried to take a shot. It just didn't work. But, you know, I guess for me, I thought that was the biggest takeaway of the game is that the defense just didn't respond. They'd played pretty well that first half. Didn't like the fact that they didn't get that turnover for a touchdown. Came back out flat, and in 90 seconds, SIU had a 28-10 lead.
Yeah.
And in most of it in the running game. It wasn't like they took two passing shots. They had a couple passes for first downs, but they ran. They were running that clock out, you know, and keeping the chains moving, and it just – some of the biggest runs of the night came on that particular drive. Because you look again at the numbers, the biggest play that SIU came up with that night, other than their touchdowns returned on defense, was like 22, 23-yard offensive plays. The defense did not get, quote, gashed, so to speak.
Right.
It was a bend, not break attitude on that drive, and I don't know why.
One bright spot, I thought Rodney Castile did a great job running the ball, had the only rushing touchdown for the Racers. The bad news offensively, they shot themselves in the foot so often. I don't know if they can have a sustained 75, 80-yard drive because we don't know. Because of the turnovers, they take care of that. It'll be interesting to see if they can amount maybe a little bit better in terms of the offense. Defense with some bright spots at times, but just consistency. I think it showed a team. I think Drew Anderson said it at the press conference. They haven't played together, especially in game situations, that much yet. So hopefully they'll learn a lot. Many times coaches say you get a lot of improvement in week one to week two. They'll certainly need it this week against a really good Central Arkansas team. They don't have the weapons they had last year, Ed. This is still a really good team. Good enough to be ranked in the top 20 in the nation.
Yeah, I think they come in this week 16th or 17th in the country, and most of that is going to come from a defensive standpoint. I mean, this is a team that is really not too much different technique-wise than SIU. They really kind of run the same type of beefy defense that the Salukis ran out on the field. I know a lot of Racer fans seem to be a little concerned SIU's not going to be that good this year. I don't agree with that. I firmly believe that from a Missouri Valley standpoint, they'll be in the mix. Maybe not in the top three, but I'd say top five, top six.
I agree with you. I think they'll be better.
Which is still better than the top of the OVC. I don't understand why people don't get that. Oh, we lost to a middling Missouri Valley team. The Missouri Valley is one of the best football conferences in the country, like regardless of class. I mean, yeah, they're not going to be a Power 5 FBS, but the FCS, the Missouri Valley is one of the best conferences, if not the best conference, in college FCS football. SIU is certainly going to be on the up. Look at the defenses that they're able to throw out there. I mean, some of these guys are All-Americans. Jeremy Chen's an All-American. I mean, their safety, unbelievable player. Unbelievable. He made play after play after play. But going forward to the Central Arkansas game, this is a defense that's, Mitch is right, outside of maybe Kentucky and maybe Jacksonville State later on for homecoming, this is the best defense that this team will face this year, period. Anybody, even 10 weeks down the road toward the end of the season when things are humming and drumming and everybody's working together and, you know, maybe SEMO's got it together or Tech's got it together or Tennessee State. No. The best defense that this team will face, at least on paper, is this week against Central Arkansas. And Central Arkansas nearly beat Tulsa. So it's certainly a tough test, no doubt. People are wondering, you know, maybe why Racer football is even scheduling a team like Central Arkansas. 5-6 years ago, they were in the middle of building their program.
Right.
And now they've built it. Last year, they were a top five program. I think their playoff run ended a little too short for them. I don't think they got as far as they thought that they could, especially with that defense. You know, they've got another guy like Tremont Smith, who, you know, was drafted and is now at Kansas City. It's their safety. I think it's Juan Johnson. Is that his name?
Yeah, I think so.
He's unbelievable.
16 tackles.
Yeah. Last week against Tulsa in an FBS game. You know, take a look at another guy. Zach Hall had 22 tackles against Arkansas State for SEMO.
Yeah.
OVC is going to be fun to watch this year. But before we get there, before the Racers get there, dealing with the Bears in Conway, Arkansas, you have to hope the rain's going to hold off. I know it's probably going to be a little soggy getting there. It looks like game time might be pretty clear. I was checking some weather earlier this week. I know, obviously, that a lot of that's subject to change with tropical storm in the Gulf, but you have to wonder, are field conditions going to be a problem? Is Central Arkansas going to be a problem? This is a tough week to see if your offense can rebound and get something going.
They have a new head coach. I don't think things have really changed there. They're a former head coach now at South Alabama. But, this is a stiff test. It's a strange – if fans watch it on ESPN Plus, I believe it's on, they'll see a strange carpet. It's alternating purple and gray stripes, so it's a really strange looking field. But they have a dynamite facility. We played there a few years ago. I'd never been to Conway, Arkansas. Didn't really know what to expect, and I was really blown away. Really nice area there.
I'm looking forward to it. I was debating whether or not I was going to go because it is such a long trip. I do believe I am going to make the trip. I want to see how the Racers respond to a top 25 program. They seem to, in Mitch's tenure at least, they seem to have played pretty well against ranked opponents, win or lose.
Yeah.
It's always a response. And again, I am of the notion and that if you take half of the turnovers away, that Racer offense gets motivated and motored. They were able to come away with, 250 yards total? Had two or three of those drives been sustained, we might be looking at, yes, we might still be looking at an SIU win. I'm not taking anything away from that. It's probably, if I had to guess, maybe 35-20, 35-28. Maybe it's just a 1-2 score difference that really kind of meets that in the middle. SIU was probably, a 2-touchdown favorite coming into that game?
Yeah, I'd say so.
2 touchdowns, I think Mitch and company would have loved to have opened the season with a 2-touchdown loss to SIU instead of a 39-point loss. I think that would have been far more easier to handle, where you can start talking about, I said this on Monday, you can talk about the smaller problems and not the bigger problems, egregious errors. It's one thing to have the small stuff kill you. When the big stuff kills you, there's just not much else you can say.
Well, this is a team, as you mentioned, they led Tulsa as we go under the 11-minute mark. I think 10-15, 10-20 to go. Tulsa is able to take the lead on them. Then on the ensuing kickoff, Battle fumbles it inside the 5-yard line. Tulsa punches it in, and there's the difference in the game. Tulsa is able to get the ball back and then basically run the clock out at that point.
Yeah, and that's how close Central Arkansas was to opening the season with a win against an FBS opponent. You know, and that's the dream for an FCS program. An FCS program wants nothing better than to come away with a big win against Big Brother FBS.
Yeah.
You see it all the time. Everybody talks about, this team got paid this much to go, you know, look at Illinois this past weekend. Illinois was treacherously close. They'd paid $1.1 million, for Kent State?
Yeah.
To come to Illinois and give Lovie Smith his opening win? Nope. Kent State was leading late in that game and led at the half before the Illini, the fighting Illini, fought their way to a tough, hard-nosed win over an FCS opponent. But we know Kent State. I mean, come on now. I mean, Kent State's been, I mean, they're good. So was it Kent State?
I don't remember. I'm not sure. You have to look it up to be sure.
I am going to have to look it up.
2-year anniversary of Lovey's first win, which came against the Racers.
Came against the Racers, yeah.
I did see that. Nevertheless, we go into week 2. Murray State playing against Central Arkansas. By the way, there is a game tomorrow night, Thursday night. Number 7, Kennesaw State plays at Tennessee Tech. They have a brutal schedule for themselves as they played at Chattanooga last week. They get number 7, Kennesaw State, this week. Dayton is at Southeast Missouri on Saturday. EKU at Marshall. It's Mississippi Valley State at Jacksonville State. JSU, by the way, the only ranked team in the Stats FCS Bowl. Tennessee State plays Jackson State. This will be the most well-attended game in the OVC. They'll have 40,000 to 50,000 fans at Memphis for the Heritage Classic. Presbyterian is at Austin Peay. UT Martin at Middle Tennessee. And Eastern Illinois at number 19, Illinois State. More manageable games. Only two OVC teams came away with wins last week. I think that'll be better this week.
It will be. Also, I got to go back and retract a statement. I forgot. Kent State's in the MAC. I'm silly. But still, Illinois paid $1.1 million for Kent State to come in. When you pay a team to come in, you don't want to lose.
If it's a million or more, it's an FBS school. The FCS, generally the going rate, most you can get usually $650.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah.
And they know that.
But still, I made that mistake. I forgot. Kent State's certainly in the MAC. That's MACtion. But Kent State certainly was not favored in that game. But I do agree with you, Neil, going back to what you just said. You're exactly right about this week. I think this will be a much more favorable week. One in the OVC is always tough because it usually is a really good matchup with Jacksonville State. They're always playing a top 25 team, and then everybody else is usually playing either a really tough money game on the road, or they've got somebody tough at home that's like a tough home and home.
Yeah.
You know, that's an out of state, you know, out of conference opponent that's always going to be draws attention, draws fans, but doesn't necessarily draw a win. So this week might be a little bit different.
One other football note: DeMontre White did not make the Kansas City Chiefs roster, but he did, as I understand it, going to be signed with the practice team.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, they reported that. Kansas City Star reported 10 guys on the practice squad, I think, or 9, and he's one of them.
Great, so he did
He for sure made the practice squad. I'm sure he'll ride with the team as long as he possibly can. Cornerback is certainly an opportunity at Kansas City right now. I think a lot of people are even questioning why Kansas City didn't draft a corner in the first 3 or 4 rounds because they don't really have a lot of depth at that position right now. But that's also a big reason why DeMontre Wade went there. You know, one of the big reasons that, you know, I think there was an opportunity for him to possibly get drafted. There was talk that he was going to be drafted in the 4th or 5th round. He falls out of the draft, as many corners did, and he had several options. I think he had 3 or 4 different options from a defensive standpoint where he could have signed to play on during the summer and leading into fall camp and the preseason, but he felt like Kansas City, with the amount of retirement that they had and the trades that they made to deal some of their talent away, that they would have that's the best opportunity for him. And he's made the practice squad. I'm going to tell you right now, no shame in making the practice squad.
No. You don't have to eat ramen noodles. I know that from the few racers we've had on those squads.
Yeah, the squads.
You're doing okay.
Your squads, you're still making a living. Yeah. Matter of fact, I think one of the best jokes I've ever heard, somebody's bit, I cannot remember who did this bit, but it was the Brett Favre fit where it was like, well, if I was Brett Favre, I'd be on a practice squad till I'm 65 years old. It's like, right. Oh, you mean you're going to pay me $125,000 a year to take hits in a practice field? Yeah, sign me up. I don't care. I'm 58. I'll get a knee replacement. That's fine. If you mean I'm going to make $250,000 right now to put on a jersey and throw from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. and possibly get a phone call to be called up to the NFL? Yeah, I'll do that forever. So, you know, I don't necessarily know how much DeMontre Wade is going to get paid from a practice squad standpoint. I'll look into that as we get, you know, season kicks off, you know, this weekend. But I'm happy for him. It's certainly an opportunity of a lifetime, and you want to try and live it out as long as you can. So I think of the practice squad, I mean, it really is. I mean, it's a reserve list.
If somebody
if somebody gets injured, you're in. That's, I mean, you're getting called up that next week. You're on the depth chart. You're rolling with the 53. So, you know, he didn't make the 53. I think they're going 6 deep at corner right now. And they've got a couple corners on the list at the reserve level, and he's one of them. So happy for him, and we'll see how that plays out. Kansas City will be a good team this year.
Let's talk some Racer soccer. They played once last week. They defeated Florida International. They don't have buzzer beaters in soccer, but if they did, that pretty much was one, wasn't it?
I'd say so, because I was out of town on my way to high school, cover a high school football game. That game had 2 lightning delays on top of that. So
yes.
It's really, I almost stayed to cover that game. So I haven't seen Racer soccer yet, other than the exhibition. And I know they've been on the road against Ole Miss, and they've had some decent home games, but I've had a lot of high school football to cover. And so I digress. I was going to go cover that game, and I was like, well, I'll just keep up with it. The weather looks kind of iffy. I just need to get to a high school football game and get there on time. And sure enough, I made the right decision. Two lightning delays put that game almost up until kickoff around Western Kentucky for high school football. But in the meantime, the Racers take a 2-0 lead, then an own goal and another goal make it 2-2. You think this game's going to go into some overtime and perhaps even end in a tie, and Rebecca Kuban comes away with like just a shot of a lifetime with 1.1 seconds to go. I mean, you look at the FAU players. They're just stunned. Like, they're thinking it's fixing to go to overtime.
Sure.
Racers aren't thinking overtime. They're like, no, we're going to finish it right here with 1.1 seconds to go. And, that is the true definition of a buzzer beater in any other sports. A Hail Mary touchdown, a dunk or a lay-in or a alley-oop at the buzzer to win. Like, any sport that, a walk-off home run, anything right at the possible last second of regulation, she did it. And her first goal of the season on top of that, so...
This week, it's just one game. It's on the road, but it's huge because the next week they get into OVC play when they take on SEMO. They play at Chattanooga. Still looking for their first road win. I realize they only played once on the road, but here's another chance here to get one at Chattanooga.
They're going to have a chance the next four or five games. I believe the next five games are on the road.
Yeah.
And that's what, that's why I'm kind of glad we were at least able to talk with Coach Lodge and Maya Watford on Tuesday, because it's like, hey, guys, y'all haven't been home much, or you have been, but you're not going to be home for this next two, 3 weeks. And, before you start rolling into a deeper part of conference play, you do host five of your last seven games at home. I think that's pretty pivotal. But, yes, this is a very, very tough stretch for Racer women's soccer, having to play some OVC matchups. I believe Georgia's mixed in there as well. They'll have played a couple OVC games before they roll back to Athens to play Georgia, another SEC opponent, after playing Ole Miss. So it'll certainly be this next 3 weeks will be certainly a tall test for this program. But I think they're up for it. I mean, they knew coming into this season what the schedule was going to be, how it was going to flip back in that way, and we'll see how it goes. But Chattanooga is certainly going to be a tough test. They're a great program in the SoCon, so we'll see how it all shakes out.
Murray State volleyball, they went 2-1 at the SIU Invitational. They will be in action against Arizona State in Binghamton on Friday, and then Saturday we'll take on, I believe it's Wyoming. So here's the pattern so far: lose the first, win the next two. I think they'd be happy to go 2-1 on this trip. This is the toughest of the three, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. You're playing two pretty solid Division I programs in Wyoming and Arizona State, and so if you can go 2-1 here, they're at the Wyoming Invitational this weekend. Yeah, that's the thing. I think people have wondered, why is women's volleyball? Why is volleyball away for the first month? Well, it's kind of been this way for a while now. It's the way that, it's the way that Schwepker likes to schedule. It makes sense.
Check the banners. It works.
Yeah, yeah. You're getting a lot of tough challenges on the road before you come home. You're gone for a month. Yeah, maybe everybody kind of forgets that volleyball's here, but it's like, well, you got to play in a lot of these tough venues outside of your conference, away from everything, to kind of get everything figured out, test it. This is a chance. These invitationals are a chance for him to check his depth. They're a chance for him to run out a lot of different scenarios, a lot of different, rotations. Let's see who we can play. Let's see who we can go with. Who can we trust in this scenario and that scenario? And really, without the distractions of home, if you think about it, you're far away. It's almost like you're taking a test and be like telling somebody, yeah, you can take the SAT, but the SAT's on the West Coast. That's kind of what he has to do. I don't necessarily disagree with you. I think it does work. I think something else people don't understand, Racer Arena is just, I don't know if anybody would ever say this, but Racer Arena is, it's an oven.
Yeah, go over there today.
Today.
Go do a little walk around and go.
Yeah. Be like, it's a workout, And so I don't necessarily think that's even a real factor. Like, they'd probably love to have a home match on a late Friday night early in the season. But I mean, might be a little bit of a factor. I mean, Racer Arena is a turkey roaster until about mid-September which is when their first home match is. So, as a matter of fact, family weekend, I think they host, I believe, Eastern Kentucky that Saturday.
Yeah.
When the Racers play, I believe, UT Martin.
Yeah.
So, about 3 weeks away from that, but that's a big weekend, and that'll be, they will have already played a couple of OVC matches before they come home for that first match on Saturday night.
Yesterday, women's basketball released its schedule. There's two ways you can go about it. Pile up wins against easy teams or do what Rochelle's doing. It looks as if, and I know the answer to this, it looks as if Allen hated Rochelle and scheduled this and said, there you go, but that's not the way it is. This is Rochelle's doing. She wanted this schedule, wanted the tough schedule, and man, does she have it. Butler, Tennessee, Kentucky, Illinois. It is a brutal out-of-conference schedule, but when OVC rolls around, her team will be ready.
I tweeted this yesterday. I love it.
I do, too.
I love it. If I thought for 1 second that I could just take the Paxton Jet and go to Kentucky or Tennessee or Butler, Illinois, and go catch these games, I don't know if it's in. I don't know if it's within our means to send me to some of these games, but they close their non-conference slate with at Kentucky, at Tennessee. That's near Christmas. I don't know. Like, as a player, that might be tough. As a fan, it might be tough. As a journalist, I think it's fun. I mean, I'd love to see the men do that. Go play at Kentucky and at Tennessee. But if Matt McMahon's listening, he'd probably just turn the podcast off. So, I like it. I know that they're trying to get some special things done. Let's not take anything away from that. They probably wouldn't be doing this every year. I know that Kentucky, Tennessee, and Illinois, on the record, have officially locked in paid games that are going to help finance what Rochelle and her coaching staff see and facilities management see as a much-needed renovation to that women's locker room. And you and I have already talked about that more than once since she revealed these dates in the summer. But the more that I look at the rest of what goes around it at Arkansas State, obviously the return game to Butler, you open the season with Evansville at home. It's fun. And then you've got SIU coming to Murray State, too. I mean, you got two Missouri Valley teams. You got a Sun Belt team, two SEC programs, a Big Ten program. That's a fun schedule. And I would think, with how new and how fresh this team is going to look this year with its new pieces, they have to think it's fun.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, they might not think it's fun if they walk away from Kentucky with a 110-75 loss and a Tennessee loss that's like 95-63. That might be tough. I won't take away from that. But the experience, the Tennessee game alone has enough ties for everyone on this team, you know, the Pat Summitt respect.
Oh, that's one of Rochelle's idols.
Yeah, the Holly Warlick respect, like, there's people on this team that have done nothing but love Tennessee basketball growing up, and now they're going to get to go play in that venue in Knoxville. That alone, I think, is going to certainly bring a little bit of a let's call them the nerves. This we're here, we are at Tennessee.
I've been in that arena and had Pat Summitt knock some of my stuff off before.
Like, just knocks it. Oh, I'm sorry, Neil.
I'm setting up for the men's broadcast. We had a game there that night. They were practicing, and had set some stuff up there kind of in the way, I think, and she kind of backed into it accidentally. But I remembered where I was and said nothing.
Well, what do you say to Pat Summitt?
I didn't say anything.
Pat Summitt's allowed to knock your stuff off.
She can knock.
Fine.
If you want to knock it off again, she could do that. But it was like she just backed into it, and I had some stuff leaning out, like, over this little thing, I guess, whatever you call it. The word can't come to mind. Sort of a shelf that we use for the broadcast, and it happened. And my son, meanwhile, I'm not sure what happened to him, dropped on his head or something, but he's a huge Tennessee Vols football fan. So he found an open gate and was able to roam the stadium and have a look at Neyland Stadium.
Nice.
With nobody in there, and then came back and said, "Did you get to see it?" And said, I kind of had a tour.
Sort of.
Set up a self tour, you know. And I said, "What if you got caught? You just, I guess, probably used the, well, I didn't know what. I saw a door open. I was, looking for the basketball arena. Where's that? You know, but he didn't get caught. But it was an interesting experience, and they'll have one too. I mean, you know, the ball is one of the top names in women's college basketball. Ever. And they get to play in that arena.
Ever. And I just feel like, well, you take a look at the schedule as a whole, yeah, maybe there aren't a lot of wins, but at the end they will have been supremely tested. I think Rochelle will have been able to have tested at that point a lot of depth, potential depth at least, to see where they stand against some of these programs. And why not? Rochelle said over the summer, why not at least take a look at what it takes to be this kind of a program? Let's just get an inside look. Let's get an inside look at a locker room. Let's get an inside look at an arena, see their coaching and their tendencies, see their play style. Let's get an up-close and personal look at the type of program that these schools run. Your Kentuckys, your Tennessees, your Illinois, you know, even your Butlers and Arkansas State's on the road. Let's take a look at these top-notch programs and see how they do it. Let's get a first close look, first-hand account, and bring that back and see what we can do with it in the Ohio Valley Conference. So we'll see. I just know that a lot of the girls, a lot of the young women are really excited.
One other college note, I know Louisville talked a big game against Alabama, and it didn't work out for them as they had planned. Alabama, I think, had read some of the notes, and didn't go well for Louisville.
I wish that I didn't take so much joy in it. I think my only frustration... And Will Aubrey said this on Tuesday, and I don't know if Will listens to us or not. Probably not. He probably has 9 million much better things to do. But the one thing I will – and Will's a Louisville fan, and Will said it best. He said, we talked too much.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But then he took it a step further, and he was like, I don't understand why we talk too much. He was like, most coaches going into their press conferences and their players, when they see an opponent like that on the schedule, the defending national champions – they remove all hubris and they just step to the mic and they say, we're up against it this week. We know we've got a tough opponent. We're looking forward to it. Bring a great challenge.
That's great.
You know, nobody's saying that you're bowing down to Alabama and when you say statements like that. Nobody's saying, oh, Alabama, national champions again in 2019, call it off. Like, nobody's saying those things when you have that kind of a press conference, you know. Mitch Stewart had that type of a press conference yesterday. Boys were up against it. Top seven, you know, top 20 program. Great defense. Got a couple guys on that roster probably going to make the NFL. You know, we know it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough road matchup. We're looking forward to the challenge. Nobody said that from Louisville. You had a bunch of wide receivers and a bunch of skill guys saying, oh, we could beat them one-on-one. You have Bobby Petrino saying, we're going to beat them. It's like, you guys are fools. Like, why would you ever? There is a history lesson. Last year, when Vanderbilt said, we want Bama. Spoiler alert, that's a meme now. That's a meme. That is an online sports meme when we say, we want Bama. No, you don't. Like, yeah, you want Bama because you want the publicity, and you want Bama because you want to go and play in that neutral site with that atmosphere or even at Tuscaloosa, but you don't really want Bama, because when you say you want Bama, you want to be down 28-0 at the half. You want 5 penalties for 12 men on the field, which you had by halftime, which, by the way, didn't work. 12 Louisville players wouldn't beat 11 Alabama players.
Do you think they should have let that slide just to make it fair?
You know
what,
Louisville, you're down 21-0. Here's a 12th guy. It's like phoning a friend and who wants to be a millionaire.
Right.
Like, that's a 12th guy might have helped them win the football game. They still wouldn't have won. I don't understand it. Like, again, I understand Louisville fans saying, well, we're just not supposed to come out and be pumped up and excited about it. That's fine. I'm fine with you coming out and saying, we're ready to play. We're excited to play. We like our game plan. There are 9 million other things you can say other than, oh, we don't think their DBs are that good. Spoiler alert, the DBs are that good.
They're pretty good.
They're pretty good. There's only two teams, I think, even in the country right now, if we were to play the national championship tomorrow, that would even remotely hang with Alabama. And one of them is Clemson. I'd love a rematch of the championship for 2 years ago, coming down to the wire. That would be great. But I mean, there's still a lot of football to play. Still a lot of things that have to happen. I just don't understand why Louisville would go to that. Why? Why would you rise to that? Mm-hmm. Like, it's literally a year ago today. It was Vanderbilt that was 3-0. That was like, we want Bama. No, you want to lose 59-0. And then you saw the pictures in the Tennessee in the next day of the guys, like the fan in the stands that's just miserable and just a brown paper bag over his face, or you know, or whatever. Or you see the Vanderbilt players on the field that like look like all their gear's been ripped off because Alabama's destroyed them. Like, I just don't get it. Why ask for that? No, I don't know.
Let's roll to high school football. You saw a terrific game, and we had really two dynamite games, two rivalries, one old rivalry, and then a newer one. Mayfield and Tillman billed as a terrific game, and it was for a while. Mayfield eventually pulling away for the win, but that was a great game. And then Graves putting McCracken in an early hole before McCracken was able to dig out of it. But two really good games, yes, last week.
Well, I think anybody watching the first 15 minutes of Mayfield-Tillman probably had a heart attack, because that was 55 points in the first quarter.
Yeah.
For every big play that Mayfield had, Tillman had an answer. And it's been a little while since that's been a thing. I know that everybody like had to catch their breath after that was over, because after that, Mayfield rung off 23 straight points and won the game 51-27. But I think that, first of all, congrats to Mayfield. That's their, I believe, either 12th or 13th straight win in the series, a series that's been going on for 105 games now, one of the longest in the country. It's one of the great American rivalries to exist, and it's actually called one of the great American rivalries. I wish I'd come up with that, because that's such a great, but it really is. It's such a great atmosphere. It's such a great game. I've covered it before. And it just, rain or shine, team's good or teams are bad, that people get together for that game, because there's just so much history between Tillman football and Mayfield football. You've got to give a lot of credit, first of all. I know that Mayfield won, and again, congrats to them. That offense is so special. I know it's only 3 weeks into the season, but I don't think people understand how good Mayfield's offense is. We always talk about defense, but this is a team that can take shots. They're not necessarily a plotting team. They are big play-oriented. They certainly can go. With high tempo, and it's not necessarily all screen action. They've got some guys that can go and get the football, and they can take chances down the field. plus a great complimentary running game in Kentre Matthews, who, again, I still don't understand why he was voted, like, what, 9th, 8th, 7th, somewhere in the preseason Gridiron Glory. He's the all-purchase player of the year. I'll say it right now, third week of the season. I don't care. He is the all-purchase player of the year. If he continues this kind of even remote streak. But you take a look at what that game had. It's been just a little while since Tillman was really kind of in the thick of it. And, man, they were really in the thick of it.
Yeah.
Even being down 51-27 near the end, they can run the football and do a really good job getting people out of position. And that leads me to this next game, because I'll be covering Tillman Graves this Friday.
It's kind of like they had a little tournament.
Yeah.
Because now it's Tillman Graves, McCracken Mayfield.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so you've got my game, McCracken. You want to talk about turnovers? McCracken turned the ball over 7 times.
Yeah. Like, but Murray State, we can beat you.
Yeah.
Hold my non-alcoholic beverage. It's high school, of course.
Yeah. They turned the ball over 7 times. They lost 6 fumbles and still won a football game.
Oh, wow.
And that's because Elijah Wheat and that defense. Elijah Wheat at quarterback, 315, I think 320, 340 all-purpose yards, including 200 passing, 131 rushing for sure, including a game-clinching 62-yard touchdown on a read option play. Kid's got some wheels. But you take a look at my game, you know, Graves was up, I think, 20-7 when Franklin Hayes returned a kickoff touchdown for a 75-yard score makes it 20-14 with about 2 minutes to go in the half. Then a play later, the PAT gets doesn't get blocked, but they rough the kicker. Graves does, which puts the kickoff. They're able to pin the kickoff. Special teams was great in this moment. They pin the kickoff. Darius Kane tackles the kick returner at the 11. One play later, they blitz Ryan Mathis. He throws an interception to Darius Kane. Back-to-back plays for him. Kane gets the interception. They kick a field goal. So all of a sudden, in a span of 90 seconds, it goes from 20-7 to 20-17. Well, then Graves gets the ball to start the second half. They're driving. They lose a fumble in the red zone.
Wow.
So it was just one of those things. Like, even though McCracken had seven turnovers, six of them lost fumbles, McCracken was able to score in very, very opportune moments. They also had a brilliant play action touchdown to take the lead. I think it was 54 yards over the middle to Cannon LaFont. It was an unbelievable play. They take the lead there, and that's the game, you know, and then they were able to hold on and win. And, you know, you move into this weekend where you do have Mayfield, McCracken,
yeah,
and Paducah. This is Mayfield's first road game, and then you've got my game, Tillman Graves. That's the two games we'll be covering this week, and that mine's in Paducah, and so is Al's. Al will be at Mayfield McCracken, and I'll be at Tillman Graves, and it should be good.
Two other notes from last week. One of those, I was unaware the basketball season started between Marshall and McCracken, or Marshall and Ballard Memorial. I thought it did at first, and then read that was a football score, but it was nuts.
I keep trying to stress to people, I don't care. Mayfield will probably throttle what Ballard Memorial tries to do. But from an offensive standpoint, Ballard Memorial's offense with Eric Marinelli, Drew Cox, a lot of guys around them to really help, like Daquan Donlow, they do a really good job of spreading the football, particularly out of that kind of pistol offense formation. Marinelli is the real deal. I can't get people to understand. I know that they play kind of a more down-to-earth schedule. They don't necessarily play a lot of the tougher opponents, but the tough opponents that they do play, they still put up points.
Yeah, that was a prime example.
And they've got opportunities this year to do it. Crittenden County, Murray. You know, Murray knows that Murray beat him 83-51 last year. Like, they had to score 83, because if they hadn't, they wouldn't have won that football game. You know, Crittenden County scored 70 and didn't win last year. You know, so you've got such a special offense out of La Center in a quarterback, senior quarterback like Eric Marinelli, a wide receiver in Drew Cox, and just the pieces around them that they can just go.
Yeah.
And so Marshall was able to counter. The hilarious part was they almost didn't counter, but they were able to run for almost 500 yards as a team, keep the ball out of Ballard Memorial's hands just long enough to win that football game and outlast them. So, but yeah, that's Ballard Memorial for you. I mean, their offense is extremely special, and Marinelli's only gotten better over the last 3 or 4 years.
And before I let you go, breakfast was mighty tasty Saturday morning for the Callaway County football team. They put one in the win column against Metcalf County. They got Marshall County this week. They'll try to go back-to-back, but I'm sure it was really great. Didn't win a game last year. They already have cracked the win column, and they'll try to make it two this week.
Well, in Metcalf County, to be completely fair, Metcalf County is not a terrible 2A program. I mean, that certainly wasn't. And that was kind of a pick 'em game. I think if you'd picked Metcalf County, you wouldn't have been crazy. If you picked Callaway County, you wouldn't have been crazy, you know. But it could have gone either way, just for the simple fact that, you know, Chris is a new coach, he's a new staff, he's a new offense, a lot of new pieces. It could have been enough to jumble the circuits and not get everybody on the same page, but everybody was on the same page. I think Schwepker and who else had a touchdown in that game? Luke Schwepker and I believe... Was it, did John Foster throw a touchdown? I have to go look at the stats, but I know that Schwepker had a touchdown. And that's a big deal, you know, for this team to really start to find its pieces, find some momentum. I will say that a game against Marshall County is going to be really, really tough. That Marshall County run game is legit.
Sure.
And they certainly can generate yards on the ground for sure. And they've got some real playmakers in the running game. Plus a very stable quarterback in Stokes. So we'll see how that, you know, kind of shakes out. But this week's games are going to be a lot of fun. It's a little bit of parity across the board.
Yeah, I'd appreciate the visit. We'll see you Saturday night in Conway, Arkansas.
Indeed.
All right, we'll be back next week.
have been listening to The Neil Bradley Show, or you have fast-forwarded to this point and skipped the show entirely. Tune in weekdays for The Neil Bradley Show on 1340WNBS.com or subscribe free by searching for The Neil Bradley Show on the iTunes podcast app. The Neil Bradley Show is a presentation of WNBS Sports in conjunction with Forever Communications.